Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
We travel to Bavaria, Germany, not as it is today, but as it was in the tumultuous shift-in landscape of the 1970s, a time of cultural upheaval refracting through the lens of a small, devout community, our stage for an unsettling journey into the supernatural. Our narrative centers on Anna, a young woman whose early life epitomized innocence and piety. Born into a tight-knit Catholic family, Anna was the picture of devotion, attending Mass, participating in parish life, and embodying the virtues her family held dear. Little could anyone predict that this serene beginning would spiral into a controversy that would captivate and divide not only her community, but the world. From loving daughter and promising student to a name synonymous with one of the most chilling and vigorously debated exorcism cases in modern history. But as we explore the layers of Anna's story, remember, things are not always as they seem. Beneath the surface of her devout beginnings, strange undercurrents were starting to stir, whispers growing louder, and sanity beginning to fray at the edges. Anna's earliest memories are bathed in sunlight, filtered through the stained glass windows of her village church. The hues of red, blue, and gold danced along the pews every Sunday morning. As she sat beside her family, all of them joined in prayer, life was a tapestry of simple pleasures. School days filled with learning, afternoons with friends under the sky, and evenings at home where laughter often mingled with the aroma of her mother's cooking. Her world was small, secure. She was cherished and sheltered, always watched over. Her parents ingrained in her the virtue of piety, the reverence for the sacred, and the conviction that her faith would guide her through any storm. But as Anna approached her 16th year, a shadow crept over her world, uninvited and unseen at first. It began with whispers, faint and distant, like echoes in a vast empty hall. Anna's nights became restless, her dreams, landscapes of strange and disturbing visions. The first time her body betrayed her, it was an ordinary day. The sky as clear as the mountain spring, but darkness veiled Anna's eyes, and the earth slipped away beneath her. When she awoke, surrounded by concerned faces, it marked the end of her tranquility and the beginning of a pilgrimage through uncharted terrains of doctors and white-walled rooms. Diagnosis came like a sentence. Epilepsy, they said, with threads of depression woven through. Treatments followed, pills, endless questions, tests. The medications clouded her mind, dulled her senses, but did little to silence the growing cacophony or the feeling that something inside her was profoundly wrong. Her faith, once a beacon of hope, now flickered dimly as voices grew louder, more demanding, more sinister. The battle for her soul had begun, though she scarcely understood the battlefield.
So one thing that I would like to mention here, while I don't personally have a personal relationship with epilepsy, my sister does have epilepsy. So I do know a little bit about it. And I do empathize with that because she has lost so much from epilepsy. And I can understand, especially because I think I know where this is going, how that would take a toll and how they would think that's what this is. Because especially the medications, the things that my sister's gone through, and just the toll that it takes on your body. She's gone through so freaking much. It messes with your head. And oh my gosh, I can't even tell you the doctor appointments and all the things that she's gone through. And we're just going to say for now, that is what she has. We're just going to go with that. It's horrible. Just even from a family perspective, watching somebody go through that, not having control of their body, not knowing what's going on. And then every time that she would have a seizure, she would not have a clue what was going on for the next, I don't know, half an hour. And then she'd wake up and she'd be okay, but she'd be groggy. And then she'd be okay in the next like hour or so. But she'd have bruises and cuts. And it would just be luck whether somebody caught her or not if she was standing. It was just luck. It happened a couple of times when she was at work and people would catch her when she was falling down. Thankfully, she was sitting a couple of times. And it's controlled now. Yay. We found medication that works for her, which is awesome, but it took years to get to that point. That's terrifying. And that's coming from a standpoint of somebody that it's not even happening to. Not having control of your own body, that's horrifying.
I'll let you kind of go on that, but
yeah.
It's not epilepsy.
I figured as much, because I kind of ish know the story a little, but I figured it wasn't just from the way you were going there a little bit.
So you have to take this in context of when it happened in the 1970s. Epilepsy was the doctor's, because honestly, they didn't know what was causing her issues. But we'll get into more of it later on. But yeah, it most likely wasn't epilepsy. At least not the epilepsy that most people are thinking. So one thing I learned is that there's actually more than one form of epilepsy.
Oh, there's so many. I know a cousin of mine also suffers from absent seizures, where she's just basically just not there for a minute. And it's like a whole different kind, which is also just terrifying because she's just basically just like mentally gone for a minute. It's bizarre.
So yeah, we'll get into more of it because you don't know what this story's about.
Nope, sure don't. I have no idea.
The only reason she kind of knows is because I had to title the recording. Otherwise, she probably won't know.
I know nothing.
Well, we already knew that. As the seasons changed, so too did Anna's reality. It was as if the world she knew was slowly warping, edges blurring into the realm unseen but deeply felt. Her body, once a temple of the Holy Spirit, had become a battleground for forces she could neither understand nor control. The first time she heard the voices, she was alone in a room. The walls seemed to whisper secrets in tongues she couldn't decipher. Shadows flickered at the corners of her sight, skittering away when she turned to look. Each night, familiar figures from the paintings and crucifixes seemed to warp into grotesque parodies of sacred art. It seemed as though the very essence of holiness was being twisted into something dark. These weren't simple nightmares or the echoes of her mind's creations. They were real to her, as real as the sun that rose each morning but no longer brought comfort. She began to see faces distorted, grimacing from the walls, the floors, even closing in around her in the open fields. Their presence was both suffocating and isolating. In desperation, her family turned to their church, their anchor in every storm. But what solace can one find when even the clergy's faces grow pale upon hearing your confession? The priest listened with a furrowed brow and trembling hands as she unveiled her torment. The sanctity of her confessional could barely contain the chill that descended with her words. The next days were shrouded in hushed tones and hurried meetings. Figures of the church, from whom she had expected compassion and guidance, now eyed her with a wariness reserved for the cursed. It wasn't long before more priests visited, their faces etched with both skepticism and fear. Discussions were laden with ancient texts and debates over the state of her soul, rather than her mind. Talk of exorcism began to permeate the air around Anna like a thick fog. Each mention of it sent chills deeper into her bones, yet part of her clung to the possibility of relief. Could it be that she was indeed possessed? Had her body become a vessel for something unholy?
Well, first off, that would be really terrible. Just starting to be alienated from all the people that you believe that you need and that you trust and that you look to.
Yeah, for a child, nonetheless, you've got to understand that they are deeply religious. And she is essentially being, not necessarily shunned, but almost treated as an outcast during this time. That's got to be hurtful. This is the people that she trusts the most that are supposed to be helping her. And she's feeling like they're not. They're scared of her almost.
It's basically like she's got a communicable disease at this point. You are contagious. We all have to stay far away from you. And as much as we think we love you, we can't be anywhere near you, even though what they probably preach is love. And that's what she's known is love. And she can't have that. She's completely alienated. That's got to be terrifying. And especially with all the nightmares and everything else she's going through at that point.
And the other thing you got to take into account is the fact that this is a different time. This is obviously pre-internet. The idea of an exorcism has to be a foreign concept to her. I can't imagine exorcisms were openly talked about, especially with children. So she probably had heard about them. And you know how kids are. They're going to have ghost stories of exorcism if they even have heard that word before.
If they did, but at the same time, I'm sure she's probably, maybe it'll save me. Maybe this is the one thing that I've got.
Yeah. The more she's hearing these people that she is supposed to protect her, saying that an exorcism might be needed to save her, of course you're going to believe that. Anyone would. It would be equivalent to a parent telling you that you need to get this done to save you.
What else do you believe at that point? Yeah. Like, that is the word that you believe, period. That's the law, more or less, that you believe at that point.
Yeah. And as we'll soon find out, that may not be the best.
Sad day.
The decision to begin exorcism was not made lightly. Anna's family, gripped by fear and hope intertwined, believed fervently that the church could reclaim her from this nightmare. The first exorcism session was an onslaught of sensation and terror. The room was cold, unnaturally so, as if winter itself had seeped into the walls, the floors, the very air they breathed. Anna lay on a small bed, the old wooden crucifix above her seemed to stare down with a stern gaze. Father Renz began with prayers, his voice steady, but growing anguished with each verse recited. As the priest invoked the name of Christ, the voices inside her twisted in fury. They were no longer mere whispers, but a cacophony of shrieks and howls, battling against the sacred words. Each prayer intensified the voices, provoking them into a frenzy. Anna felt as if she were torn between two worlds, one of light and faith, the other a pit of despair and darkness, clawing to keep its hold on her. As the sessions continued, Anna's physical form began to wither. The rituals, though meant to heal, drained her. She grew frail, her eyes sunken, her skin pale and drawn. To the onlooker, it must have appeared as if the life was not being saved, but rather siphoned from her very existence. But in her heart, the decision to shun further medical advice and cling to the spiritual intervention felt like her only hope. Each chant, each line on of the hands was a plea, a desperate cry for deliverance. Yet amid the torment, there were moments of inexplicable peace. Fleeting glimpses of sanctuary amidst the storm. It was in these brief lulls that she felt a conviction strengthen within her, a paradoxical blend of suffering and sanctity that she believed was her cross to bear. Looking back, we see the lines blurred between spiritual earnestness and the neglect of the body, between ancient rites and modern medicine. Each exorcism left a mark not just on her soul, but upon her very flesh. Anna's family watched, torn between their faith in the church's power and the stark physical decline they could not ignore. As word of the exorcism spread, so did the divide. Anna's small village, once a close-knit tapestry of neighbors and friends, splintered under the weight of controversy. Whispers that once talked of mundane scandals now carried debates of faith, madness, and the unseen forces that possibly played upon her soul. Amid the murmurs, she felt her own reality turning into folklore, right in front of those who knew her as a child. As the days melded into what felt like a perpetual twilight, Anna's world shrank to the confines of her suffering. Each breath became a labor, each movement a battle against the increasing fragility of her own body. The essence of life, which once flowed so vigorously through her veins, now trickled slowly, fading like the waning autumn light. During the exorcism, she would often find herself suspended between realms. Her physical self bound to the earth, her spirit adrift in a tempest of voices and visions. In one of the final sessions, a piercing clarity broke through the chaos. As Lana lay exhausted, the room spun around her, a carousel of strained faces and flickering candles. The air was thick, charged with a tangible presence. She could hear her name called out, not just by the familiar voices of the priest, but from somewhere deeper. It called a return from the precipice of the abyss. In those moments, her heart wrestled with the duality of hope and despair. Hope, a fragile thread tethering her to the belief that salvation was just one prayer away. Despair, a daunting shadow whispering that her ordeal might never end. Yet, through this, a new understanding crystallized within her. Anna's suffering, her fight was not just for her own soul, but perhaps a testament to the tormented path we walk in the pursuit of faith. Each prayer, each rite conducted over her became a mosaic of her life's suffering and purpose. It became clear that her journey was a vessel for a larger discourse on faith and the confrontation with our deepest fears. What is our belief but a lantern in the dark guiding us through the trials of our existence? As Anna's body yielded to the immense toll of the exorcism, she found a strange solace in surrendering to the greater design she perceived at work. Whether through the struggle she was reborn or relinquished, she knew that her story would transcend the confines of her own experience, urging others to question, to seek, to challenge the unseen boundaries between despair and faith.
I feel like this is the story that horror movies are based on.
So, a slight clarification. It wasn't the exorcism that necessarily killed her. It was malnutrition and dehydration.
I figured it was probably something along those lines. It was more or less her body that gave out because of conditions possibly from it, but it wasn't necessarily the exorcism itself.
Anna may have died, but her story is not over yet.
I mean, I figured that because you still have the story in your hands and also you're giving me the look and also you keep making the face. He keeps making the face.
Do you know who we're talking about yet?
No.
I'm thinking a lot of our fans might by this point know who we're talking about.
Great.
As the dust settled on the harrowing saga of Anna, the repercussions reverberated far beyond the confines of her small Bavarian village. Legal ramifications cast a shadow over those who had sought to save her, plunging her family and the priest into a legal battle that would test their very foundations of faith and accountability. An examination into the legal outcomes revealed a complex tapestry of judgments and commendations. Anna's parents, once unwavering in their belief, now found themselves entangled in charges of neglect and causing her untold suffering. The priest who had performed the exorcism faced scrutiny over their methods and the role they played in the tragic descent of a young woman they hoped to protect. In the end, they were all found guilty, but served no jail time. The case of Anna, aka Annalise Michelle, shook the very core of traditional exorcism practices within the church. Questions arose surrounding the line between spiritual and mental health, the protocols to prevent overzealous exorcism, and the shared responsibility when faith collides with the reality of psychological distress. An era of reflection and reform beckoned, its footsteps echoing through the hallowed halls of the clergy. Anna's legacy stands as a stark reminder of the delicate balance between faith and reason, between the sacred and the profane. Her story resonates not just in the annals of culture, law, or religious practice, but also in the realm of psychiatric studies. Her case spurred debates on the recognition and treatment of mental health conditions, blurring the lines of her understanding of the human mind's intricate dances with faith and suffering. Her name, once a whispered tragedy at the crossroads of belief, now echoes through time as a beacon for dialogue, for introspection, a testament to the enduring power of one woman's story to challenge, to provoke, and to transform the very landscapes of our understanding. So, obviously, this is about Annalise Michael, and there's many routes you could take to what caused this. Was it a possession? Was it a mental health illness? Was it a physical illness that just manifested in a way that could have been interpreted as such? ultimately, at the end of the day, the fact that she died at such a young age is just horrible and horrific.
It really is.
It makes it even worse because ultimately the parents were kind of the cause of her death.
But at the same time, I feel like they thought they were doing what was best.
Yeah, I get that.
Back then, there really wasn't a lot of mental help and focus on what you could do if things were going on. Like, there really wasn't.
I know my story obviously makes it seem like it happened in such a short time, but this was over years. Her body was deteriorating to the point that it just gave out, basically. And towards the end, Annalise was adamant about not getting any more medical attention. She just wanted to put her faith in the priest. This had to have been like an excruciating. And obviously, I'm more on the science side of it. I'm not going to dismiss possession or anything like that, because obviously I believe in the supernatural. But if the exorcisms aren't working, maybe try something else. Because she had like 40-some or 50-some. I forgot what the exact number was.
Oh my gosh. Obviously something isn't freaking working.
That's the one thing that makes this case different, because her parents and the priest were actually charged. They were found guilty, but they got a 3-year suspended sentence, so they didn't actually spend any time in jail. Minus obviously what they were spent during the trial and stuff. But I think that was just way too lenient for what they put this girl through. Because this was years of hell. And I get motive. I don't believe their intentions were like bad towards her. I don't think they wanted to see her caused any harm or anything like that.
But I believe that at some point you do have to take a step back, look at the bigger picture, and say we have to do something different because something obviously isn't working.
That's the other thing that this case brings up is, at what point should we as a society say we need to intervene in something like this? Because obviously it was her will to not get any more medical attention, which ultimately led to her death. But was she in the right mind to say that at the time? Should we have said, no, you got to get medical help?
What is more medical attention? At that point, at the very least, that's fine. No more medical attention. But at the very least, we could at least stop the exorcisms and get her more food. Make sure that she's at least hydrated. Get her in the sunlight.
And granted, this case did change a lot. And exorcisms were given a whole new protocol. In fact, exorcisms today, they will work closely with doctors and psychologists and a whole team of people, not just the clergy, to do these exorcisms. They have definitely learned a lot from this, but at what cost? Should they have learned before this happened? I think they should have. Granted, it was the 70s, so mental health, we didn't know as much as we know now. The hard truth about this all is that we just didn't know what was wrong with her. Like I said at the beginning, epilepsy was what they went with, but the autopsy showed her brain showed no signs of epilepsy. So then what was it? There's a lot that we just don't know, but I think one thing that we can all agree on is that they definitely did not go the right route.
No, and she needed a lot more help than what she got.
Yeah.
I will say back then, I think that they probably couldn't do as much for her as they could now, but they could have done a lot more for her than what they did.
I get the fact that they didn't know what was wrong, but ultimately they never really had the chance to figure it out either.
Aside from believing it was epilepsy and then just jumping straight into exorcism.
To be fair, there was some time that passed. She was on medication to treat the epilepsy, but she felt like it wasn't helping.
Because it wasn't epilepsy.
Yeah. And then obviously anybody who's mood stabilizers or anything like that know that it really does dull your senses.
Oh, God, yes.
It definitely makes you feel different and not necessarily in a good way. So I understand that point of it. As we journey through Annalise Michelle's haunting tale, we were confronted with a multitude of profound themes that intersected at the crossroads of faith, mental health, and the law. Her story shone a spotlight on the intricate dance between belief and reason, humanity's enduring quest for meaning against the backdrop of unexplained suffering. Was she possessed by demons or suffering from a mental illness? We may never know the truth. What are your thoughts?
I don't know.
And I actually like that answer because I'm a very firm believer in understanding that we won't always have all the answers.
Heck yeah, we're not going to know all the answers, because there could be something out there that neither of us have realized, that nobody has thought of yet.
Sometimes the answer to the question is, I don't know. And that's just how it's going to be. I'm not dismissing the fact that she was possessed, but I'm also not saying that's 100% what was the cause.
I mean, you would think after that many exorcisms, something would have worked by then.
You would think, but I don't know.
I'm not great at exorcisms. I've done a total of 0 of them. So obviously, I would know.
That's my thoughts.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.